And welcome everybody to Off the Hook Overtime here on YouTube. This is Emmanuel. Kyle is over there.
Hi, I'm Kyle, over here.
And out in Sigma Land. Why don't you all introduce yourselves this week?
Hi, I'm myself, and I seem to be over here. And
tell me a wise guy, Rob. We all know who you are, so introduce yourself.
I am Rob T. Firefly, and I can also confirm that we're live on YouTube.
Okay.
We are indeed on YouTube, and could you please turn us down? Because, yeah, the delay was starting to get to my head a little bit. Hi, I'm Gila, and also greetings to the 25 people who are currently with us online.
That doesn't sound like much, but it's going to grow. It's going to grow one day. And
it's 30.
See, that happens sometimes. I believe there's somebody else out there in Romper Room Land.
Yeah, there is. Romper Room Land, is that what it's called now? This is Alex. How is everybody? Hello, everyone.
Good conversation. I have to say, some interesting stories out there. I'm sorry if it's too political. You know, there's nothing political about human rights. I'm sorry. It's something that we discuss because it's interesting, and we always bring technical issues to the front.
I don't know if you saw that I was on the phone during the break, that was the president of radio.
Did not spend my time looking at you while we had a break. I actually went out and did some other stuff.
Yeah, no, but it was the president of radio. He was calling me and he wanted to tell me that it was a good show and the conversation was great.
Well, that's good, but you know the president of radio has no say here because we're on the internet now.
Yeah, that's right. But he was just calling about the radio show.
Yes.
And so it was nice to get that feedback from president of radio.
We do give permission for people to broadcast us on radio on overtime, but we should warn you that we cuss on this show. Because we're not on the radio. And if you put us on the radio, well, that's on you.
Okay. Yes, we can say the shit word over here.
We certainly fucking can.
How quickly it devolves. That's what happens. It's just the internet. We mentioned Hope a little bit, and just, you know, some updates. We've had some lots and lots of people wanting to get involved and wanting to help the New Hope nonprofit flourish and get a conference going. And we are still looking for a home. You would think it would be easier to just be able to say, hey, can we have the conference at this particular location? And have someone say, sure, that sounds like a blast. This is, you know, what we charge for rental. It's reasonable, and you can afford it if you have a certain number of attendees. It's not like that at all. Sometimes they don't even answer. Sometimes they just say, go away, in not so many words. Sometimes they give numbers that I didn't even, to sound like Trump, nobody ever saw numbers like that. It's just, wow, you've got to be kidding. Is that a joke? Is that real? And, you know, this is the conversation we've been having. So I know it's not reality. I know there's a certain, corporate mentality that takes over where people say fantastic things that make absolutely no sense to human beings. We hope to get back to that world because we've been living in that world since 1994 when the first conference happened, we have been able to have successful conferences 16 times, we just want to be able to continue doing that. Being nonprofit definitely helps as far as allowing us to have more opportunities and get more people involved and not be confused with other for-profit organizations basically build something new. People are very excited by this. But we do want to stay in New York City, and by New York City I mean either Manhattan, the Bronx, Queens, Staten Island, or Brooklyn. That's all New York City right there. Manhattan would be amazing. If we can pull off Manhattan, that would be a true hack. And we are looking for space that can fit, well, right now, around 1,000 people would be great. If we have to go below that, then we'll go below that. We would like to be able to expand because, you know, back when we were at the hotel, we were at around 2,500 people. We don't want to get much bigger than that. We don't want to have this massive event that just is almost unmanageable, kind of loses the flavor of what Hope is. Hope has always been this magical experience. So many people tell us this, where all different ideas are entertained and basically debates occur. And people are very accepting and enthusiastic about technology. People have met at conferences. They have gotten married because of conferences. They have made lifelong friends because of conferences. We want to be able to continue that. We want to be able to do that every year. But we have some challenges. Being kicked out of St. John's, didn't see that coming. A lot of people warned us, hey, it's a religious institution. They're not going to like what you do. The thing is, that wasn't true for the most part. People who taught there, people who had careers there for decades, loved us and wanted us to come back. And it was really only because one person had it in for us and had a connection up high in the administration that they were able to say, you know what, we don't want you around, you're too much trouble. And we didn't even know there was any issue until after they made that decision months later. It was really kind of weird and bizarre. Everybody had nothing but praise for us, and then 3 months later we find out, oh yeah, there was a problem and we decided to kick you off. It's weird. We don't want to work with people like that. We don't want to have anyone looking over our shoulder telling us what we can and cannot talk about. It's ridiculous. We had panels about abortion rights at St. John's University. That was not a problem. That was never brought up as, oh, you can't do that. No, the people we were working with understood what we were about. They understood what freedom of speech was, and they agreed. Their code of conduct was impressive. You know, it was something that we said was great. They care about trans people. You know, they care about all kinds of marginalized communities. They protect them. That's why we didn't see it coming. And I guess, you know, we're looking at literally old school versus new school, where certain people are in power that can dictate policy. And it makes people very unhappy at that institution, for sure. We have yet to find an institution like it that we can just hop over to. We're looking. We are trying. At this point, we're looking at schools. We're looking at hotels. And somewhere in there, in New York City, in those five boroughs, somewhere there is a place for us. Well, I sound like a song from West Side Story, don't I? Yeah, it's a place for us. And
somewhere a place for us.
If we can get someone to just do that musically, I think maybe, you know, it'll go viral. But yeah, you know, this is the thing is, you know, we're relatively small as far as people who are searching. So any help we can get for people who have connections or tips or things like that. Yeah, we've heard all the suggestions that, you know, this place down the block from my house, 1,000 miles from where you are, is perfect. For you, yes, it would be perfect. For us, not so much, because we do have to work somewhat locally. We do want it to be accessible by mass transit in New York City. And plus, you know, it's tradition. It's tradition. And New York is a very welcoming place for this kind of thing.
I just want to add one thing real quick. Also, we've had suggestions for, hey, I know this abandoned building way off on a gravel road somewhere. Yeah, love that idea. Fantastic. But practically speaking, there are a lot of services. There's access. There are issues for just accommodations. So many considerations when you actually think about what our attendees and what their expectations are going into an event, yeah, and what is sort of standard in and across many different types of events, especially multi-day events. We need to have facilities. We need to have power. We need to have infrastructure. This is actually taking kind of a back seat, but network infrastructure is really important to us.
Yeah.
Academic environments were hugely validating. The religious part, I think, is practically an afterthought as far as our experience there. But it is important to be in proximity to the internet to some degree.
Right.
It helps us get our talks published and streamed live, and for people to participate, for people there to enjoy the experience and find out about things, for presenters to access things and show demonstrations, workshops. All of that relies on internet to a degree. So, as E is pointing out right now, I just want to emphasize, we love all the ideas, and in the future, in a future utopia where we can have all kinds of extra things and work parties and things like that, I am so into that. We've had really fun experiences before events where they host nights in around an activity. We'd love to do all of that. We're open to those ideas,
sure,
too, but we really have to remain focused on what is practical for putting on the size event you just mentioned, 1,000 people. Schools and hotels are our primary focus right now because they do have a lot of that as a baseline.
Was that the abandoned mental institution that person was talking about? Because I'll still go to that. I just don't think we should have a conference there, but I'm fascinated by that kind of thing.
We love nooks and crannies in New York and Manhattan specifically, all about it. But that takes a lot of surveying, engineering, some considerations to liability.
See,
you got to understand what you're taking on when you do stuff like
that.
What
a lot of people don't realize is that there's more than just a place. You need to have rooms that are set up for people to sit down in, and have a place for people to speak to those people sitting down. You know, podiums, tables, chairs, and sound of some sort. And when you look at places, you might get a quote for a rental, but then they don't include things like chair rental or audio visual, meaning just turning on a speaker. And sometimes they insist that you sign up for catering, which we don't really need. We don't really need coffee and donuts. But it would be nice, but if it doesn't break the bank, I'm all for it. But if that's a condition, then sometimes they jack that up and make it so that the rental price that you were quoted is only a fraction of what you have to pay in the end. And if we can't reach that number, then it's just not possible. The good thing about St. John's was a lot of the rooms were already set up. They already had permanent chairs and AV that worked. So that's why, schools work. They can work. But sometimes they're just not open to something like HOPE, like what we do. So, we're just looking for all kinds of ways that we can make this happen. Now that we're a nonprofit, hope.net, if you check it out, you'll see a better explanation as to what we're all about. We can do things like accept grants. And, a couple of grants could make things possible. Carl's talking about, parties and things like that.
Work parties.
Work parties. Well, I mean, there's that. But also, conference parties. Introduction to what's happening at HOPE. These can be sponsored by other organizations. And that's not a big deal. It doesn't affect our program. We've always made it clear we don't want any sponsorship or donation to steer the conversation in any way. That cannot change, and we would rather not have the conference than compromise in any way. Basically, with the ability to make all these tax deductible donations and support something that matters, I think we could be in Midtown Manhattan and be successful with the right connections. We just need those connections to connect with us, and we need to be able to talk back and forth realize that we've been hit hard with all kinds of challenges over the past year or two, and we're going to get back up. We're going to get back up and keep doing what we want to do, because that's hugely important. Dila, your hand is way up. I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
My hand is way up. No, it's fine. Okay, so first of all, speaking of getting back up, I would like to... There's 66 people with us on YouTube right now, which is, I think, the biggest number I've ever seen.
Wow.
That is very exciting. I would also like to... the conversation is jumping about the venue. So just to clear up a few things,
sure.
Lex, we love you. We're not coming to Pittsburgh.
Didn't we just say?
We did, but I want to just clarify it. We're not going to Carnegie Mellon University. HOPE is also not moving to New Jersey.
you know, no, we shouldn't. But, you know, if it's right there in Jersey City, right overlooking Manhattan, you know, that's so close. But it'd have to be a really good deal. And I will consider Minneapolis just out of respect. That's it, though.
That's it. From a personal perspective, I will say that there are advantages to both the university setting and the hotel setting. Obviously, we lose some things in some places, gain some things in other places. Both options are great. I'm looking forward to see where Hope lands, and am also really excited about, and I know I said this last week, but I'm going to say it again, about what the possibilities that exist now that Hope is a 501c3. I think that's great. And I'm very curious. So, Emmanuel, I just want to clarify. No one knows where Hope is going to be yet.
No, unless somebody can tell the future, nobody knows.
So anyone who was on IRC suggesting that Hope is going to be in Jersey City is speculating at best.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean,
okay, just clarifying.
Yeah. Well, I did just say Jersey City. That could be why they're saying that. But, you know,
understood.
Only because I know Jersey City is right, and WFMU is there. You know, it's all
right,
kinds of cool things.
Before you said Jersey City, this is going on.
They have a tram. It's a cool place.
And we did just get a question. What about Stony Brook?
Okay, the thing about Stony Brook is it's not in New York City. There's that. It's also, well, because it's not in New York City, it's far away. You know, we don't want people to spend 2 hours on a train getting to the conference after they get to New York. I don't think that's right. And also, we seem to be running into an issue with both CUNY and SUNY schools where they are very bureaucratic and they tack on all kinds of additional charges that make it unaffordable. St. John's is a private university, which is why it was more reasonable. So I think that's what we're looking for if we choose to wind up in a university setting.
And I would posit that similarly, maybe Staten Island is not super high on the list.
I wouldn't write off Staten Island. I mean, it's part of New York City. You have to take a ferry to get there. But I mean, I don't really know. I'll have it on Governor's Island. We could take the whole damn island, couldn't we?
That would be fun.
That would be fun.
Also, just a fun mention, there is a kosher schnitzel place that has, well, multiple locations, but one's on Staten Island, and it's called Holy Schnitzel.
Wow. Well, that alone is a reason to go. But the thing is, you know, we're always told it's impossible, this can't be done. And we all know as hackers, there's always an exception. There's always a way around these restrictions.
Can I just add to that? Because that is such a good point. Immediately, I've been thinking this in the back of my mind. I'm screaming in my head when you say that. That, like, just the network alone. Uh-huh. Like, I've been helping out and volunteering, and it's been a big part of my life.
Okay, Kyle, tell us the story of the network. Gather around.
Yeah, right.
This is a great story.
All right, everyone. It all started, but I've been told, I can't even remember, it's a blur, but many different times and working with different iterations of the network team, I remember having difficulties in asking for outside help, and people that are very smart people and accomplished you know, noteworthy hackers out there telling me, like, okay, just, like, why don't you have an event with no network? You know, as I'm talking about a technical problem, like, yeah, we're running into this and doing that, like, their listening is give up. Their immediate reaction in listening to the challenges of navigating different scenarios and different technical solutions to supply an uplink for our event. And imagine my bright eyes, my optimistic, my young hacker spirit out there appealing to people that I trust, that I want to, you know, get maybe some insight or at least let them understand what I'm tackling, you know, maybe get a little encouragement, a little cheerleading. And that light just dim a little as they tell me to give up, or, like, in my mind, playing out, okay, yes, here's our hacker event, and I'm selling the idea that there's no internet this time. Everyone just deal. Like, and this is in an era when phones were getting faster and better, but, like, I just... I couldn't, it like, it kind of like made me glitch. Like, I just was like, what? Like, how do we even sell that to everybody that, like, oh, just rely on your own bandwidth and that's somehow enough for this big event? Maybe that's the case. Maybe we don't need that anymore. And it's happened not one, but like maybe a couple times. There's also, and I will say this, equal measure of people that I've appealed to, listened, you know, asked advice on from the 2600 community, from Hope community, that have been like, keep trying, keep it up, you know, very, very encouraging over the years. So I'm not saying that's like across the board, but
no, but there's definitely a contingent of people who are resigned to not getting anything they want.
You would be amazed that people say like, okay, you're trying to like repair this old thing. Well, why don't you just sell it and give up?
Mm-hmm.
And here I am, you know, 20 years later, still using that same thing or something, and just thinking to myself, wow, what a life that would have been had I given up, had I decided, like, long ago, we should just dissolve having a network. Like, what's the point?
For perspective here, Kyle is the person who discovered fiber in the hotel when the hotel didn't know they had fiber. We had been paying a huge amount for some satellite connection with a company called Rainbow that we actually got to become a supplier to the hotel. And there was some kind of, I guess, microwave link to a building, and that got us, what was it, 10 megabit? Is that the connection we got from that?
It was a very paltry amount of bandwidth.
And we didn't even get a discount for finding them in the first place. And they didn't, it was just, whatever. We every year just felt wrong. And then somehow Kyle was able to discover that there had been a Super Bowl party in the hotel, and they had actually put fiber in the hotel for that one party
many
years ago.
Yeah.
And the hotel discovered it, and we were able to use it until they tore down the hotel.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't necessary. I mean, there was a lot of help along the way, particularly Alex and our network crew. They were, like, instrumental in tracking down some of that stuff once we knew something existed. But it was also some of the leadership from the IT department at the hotel just kind of saying, hey, why don't you check this room out and, you know, see what you can do, and just giving a kind of nudging us in the right direction. And this is credit to me, credit to the imperative and being strong enough to ask questions and listen. It's really listening and hearing what the staff's saying, like, hey, maybe you don't want to get a contract from this guy. Like, why don't you, did you know this is going on? And that's what put me on to, like, hey, there's this dark fiber. Like, what can we do with that? And then talking through with really, really smart people that work with infrastructure and different providers all the time, doing a survey, using their tools, looking around in the neighborhood. I mean, we had been talking about digging out from the hotel at one point prior to that, and then to find that a major television network had already done that for us was just incredible. Also, we had, I'm not saying begrudging connections, but we kind of forced the connection with some of our people that work in the industry and some representatives at RCN that were incredibly kind to us over the years. They, you know, we paid fair, you know, market rates, but they were pretty good to us. I think they're astounded now, and I don't know if anyone's still working in any of those positions, but a big thank you across the board. Everybody's helped along the way for those things, and tying it all together, keeping focused and pushing for it made it happen. And once it was there, it was something we were able to return to as a playbook. And that began to happen at St. John's, too. They were very, cautious at first, and then gradually gave us a little bit more control and access to things that we needed.
Yeah, well, you had a good reputation there.
They still, people, I think, feel a good relationship as far as the technical.
But what a number of these companies and representatives had told us over the years was, if only you guys were a 501c3, we could donate all this stuff to you, and it's tax deductible, so we're more than willing to do that. Well, now Hope is a 501c3, so what I'm hoping to see is more of those donations. We already have a grant, which is amazing, in 1 week, so there's definitely enthusiasm for this. And if we're able to get a lot of these tech companies involved on that level, then we don't have to worry about scrounging, about finding a place, because we'll be in the place and we'll have the support. And I really, really hope that the community comes together on this. Gila, I know you had something.
I did. Again, the chat has been hopping. We're at 62 right now, and I just wanted to pass along one comment from someone whose username on YouTube is a string of letters and numbers, so I'm not even going to try, but Kyle is the glue holding it all together.
That's correct. That is correct. I'm glad people see that.
Recognize.
They absolutely do. Yeah, tax-deductible donations, absolutely. You will not be able to claim your ticket to Hope as a tax-deductible expense, but if you give a donation to the organization, go nuts.
Yeah, and we'll have a lot more information about exactly different criteria and different types of things that we're going to offer in relation to that. But fundraising and donations in general, that I think is going to remain an ongoing thing, especially as we're still in like an exploratory phase for venue stuff. And I just wanted to talk about sponsoring in general. I think we're going to continue to do what we've always done. I just want to emphasize that, yeah, like we felt like companies in general that especially wished they could contribute in that way. I think that's best suited for our infrastructure, particularly the network. So as we've done in the past, I think we're just going to keep it the way it's been as far as corporate stuff staying in the realm of our network. So any of like big companies, we kind of want to keep it in support of the network so that that's a strong area of interest. So we find that's kind of is the best fit for corporations. And then for event and workshops and other aspects of the event, we would like to have organizations be behind that. But that's just a general framework of what we've done in the past. We're certainly open to ways it could go in the future, but everything is at will, and particularly our will. We don't take contributions in exchange for any kind of direction from any entity. If you don't want to be a part of that, then don't contribute. But we absolutely appreciate all the support and interest that's been out there. There are a lot of ways people are interested in contributing that are new to us that we're learning about. So it's going to be interesting going forward. But I just wanted to talk about that in general, because we've never really had like big companies or anything, and that's not necessarily what we're inviting, but it definitely allows money that's already been allocated to giving to nonprofit organizations to be directed in ways that hadn't been in the past.
And if you want to get involved, write to us, feedback@hope.net. That is the email address for that, feedback@hope.net. Tell us your ideas, how you can help, what you'd like to do. We will certainly read it, and we will hopefully get back to you soon. We're kind of deluged. We're kind of understaffed, so we need to improve. We definitely need to have more people working on outreach, and that's where everybody can help, is just getting the word out, because that will make it happen. That will make it actually a possibility. Okay, any other, Gila, did you have something else? And I know, Kyle, you have something else as well?
There, just people are starting to have questions about donating. Don't forget, you can always go to hope.net. There's information, including the organization's EIN number, which is something that you need for donations in a lot of situations. There's a credit card processor on hope.net that can allow you to make a one-time donation, set up a monthly recurring or an annual recurring donation.
Mm-hmm.
Go check that out, hope.net, and watch for more information as it becomes public.
And Kyle, you had something else.
Sure. I just thought that I could encourage people to volunteer. Volunteers at hope.net is still active, so you can get involved. We are interested in anybody, all levels of skill. That's something we've counted on and have been really relying on for so long, and that has not changed. We are still volunteer-powered in a way that is quite unusual for tech events and the sort of subculture we work in, but it also is actually quite typical. And in making something as unusual and astounding as Hope possible, we rely so heavily on the just skill and enthusiasm of people that volunteer and help out. And the other thing I was going to say is think about what you want to talk about. We are going to work on this stuff operationally. We're going to get volunteers and the right kind of liaisons and help that we're talking about as far as we work through this stuff. But that means we are going to be interested in what people have to say. So think about what needs to be said, because that's a really important part of Hope. Think about what's going on, what needs to be said. Assuming things go well, we will be looking for presentations. So I just want people to be thinking about what is important to us, what is important to hackers going forward, what will we be looking at in the future, what might you have to say about what's going on, about where we need to go as a community, as a society, or as firms or innovators or entrepreneurs. All of that stuff is super welcome. Students, everybody, we really want to hear what people have to say, because it is just a deluge. There is so much going on, and as much as people have encouraged us, we want to continue to get contributions and get new information out there in whatever form we take in the future.
You know, you mentioned the volunteer aspect of all this. Over the winter, well, this is still winter, and a good winter it is, too, by the way, in December, we were at the Chaos Communication Congress in Hamburg, and that is, that's like Hope times, I don't know how many, 50? It's so many people. It's huge. We will never be that huge. We don't want to be that huge. But, boy, they do a great job, and they're entirely volunteer-driven. And it's just amazing to see what they can pull off. Of course, you know, they're German, so obviously they're going to get all the technical stuff right. But it really it's inspirational to see that. And considering it was the European conferences that inspired the first Hope, I'm not at all surprised. But it shows you can do it. You can definitely do it if you unite and if you believe in something. And that's something, you know, we can apply to many parts of our lives.
Oh, that is such a great point. And I just want to thank people that have helped out with Hope from overseas, from other parts of the U.S. and North America, and this hemisphere, all over. We are such a global collective of interested people. And I will say, absolutely, the inspiration, the enthusiasm that I came back with is something I'm thinking about a lot, and there are so many things that we've brought back from attending other events and not being sort of running a show and doing a production, where we get to observe, and we bring those things back. There are many, many aspects of what we do, what we're able to do with Hope, that are only possible from learning about technology and tools and features, things you've said, hey, why don't we have that at Hope? And we just say, like, then we like figure out what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that has made what we do a lot more functional over the years. And we aim to continue to use a lot of that stuff and improve upon it as we have. But that takes a lot of skill. And we want to continue to be inspired and bring new things to the table, but also gain volunteers that can work with us and work with what we have built so far. But we absolutely, credit is due to, there are pieces, so many pieces of our production that we have built from seeing other events.
Well, you know, one of the best compliments that we've ever gotten is from the Europeans saying we are the most European conference they know of in the States, you know, the whole conference, which is really a very amazing thing to say, because they are the inspiration for that. And it's just, it's something that makes you, keep moving forward.
Absolutely. And there's so many people that attend from around the world. They're watching, they're streaming it, on the chat in Matrix or wherever we're communicating. They're a part of it. And then we end up, I mean, every hope that I've been involved with, I think, I mean, that I've been, you know, had visibility into, volunteers and the sort of production aspect, has had people from other parts of the world producing remotely, helping out in one way or another. And that is like, it's such an amazing thing to know that people are out there. They give us a little bit of time, teach us some things, and our backup that just really appear in really, the right moments, and just, it's just amazing how, and I say this a lot, but we have such good friends in unlikely places, and I'm so appreciative to anybody who's volunteered and helped out remotely, because while we're producing an event, knowing someone's out there checking things and monitoring has been really beneficial.
And we really need those people now. We need more such people to make this a reality. And I really think we can do it. You know, in fact, we are so confident we can do it, and this probably should have been the first thing I mentioned. We will be opening up speaker submissions to the conference, even though the conference does not yet have a home, and we can't be 100% sure that the date will remain what it was announced at, which I believe is August 14th through 16th. That is when we were at St. John's. That was the date we agreed on. It might not be that, depending on whatever venue we wind up finding. And we do intend to find something with the help of people listening, with the help of people that will step up and lend their support and skill and connections and things like that. But we will be announcing that very soon, next few days, I think. If you are committed to giving a talk at Hope, again, you know, if the date changes or if the location is something that isn't convenient for you, you can always back out. But if you want to start preparing a presentation, this is the opportunity to do that. And, you know, better than doing it all at the last minute, let's start the process now, and we will take the next step and hopefully find a good location for us. So keep watching hope.net, 2600.com for announcements. Listen to Off the Hook, and we will take the next step. Any other comments before we open up the phone lines?
I feel like this is the longest run-up to opening up the phone lines we've had ever, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, there's a time the phones didn't work and we never opened them. That happened.
Well, and also there's been a lot of stuff going on that it's taken that's been going on that has taken a lot of planning. It's been going on behind the scenes. But I am diatribing and reminiscing a bit here. I know that, but we do want to kind of bring people up to speed and share as much as we can to level with everybody and be on the same page. And so we're keeping on time with the sort of imperative that is before us. So yeah, there's just a lot going on in general, and we've been waiting and had a lot to say for a while. So it does feel good to share as much as we have here.
Okay, again, keep checking hope.net for updates. Now, who would like to give out the Off the Hook Overtime official phone number for call-in?
I would like to. Not only because I like to say it, but I accidentally called it in the middle of the week last week, and I did mean to apologize for that.
Wait. I'm not going to say it didn't cause a whole lot of commotion here, but what exactly happened when you did that? Because I don't think it was connected.
It wasn't. So I did get the voicemail that says, And I didn't even realize I had done it. I got a new cell phone recently, and I'm still getting used to, like, how big it is. And sometimes I accidentally, like, call people when I don't mean to. And I had called. We'd been doing some work with the making sure that things were working and the hum and people allegedly not being able to hear Emmanuel. So it was in my recent calls, and I picked up the phone, and all of a sudden I was like, why is Emmanuel's voice coming out of my phone right now?
Wow.
And I realized that I had accidentally called the overtime number, and the voicemail message that says don't leave a voicemail had picked up. So
there's a voicemail message that says don't leave a voicemail?
What is the voicemail that you left? Like, the message that you recorded.
You think I called this number? I have no idea what's out there.
Do you not remember saying it?
Well, I probably said it 5 years ago, so no, I don't remember it.
Tom Mitchell, watch your step.
What?
Okay, well, I wasn't listening, but all of a sudden I heard your voice, so...
Who has to watch their step? Hang on, you're confusing me here.
Sorry, a commenter who said something about... Yeah.
Oh, I thought you had, like, a dog or something you were warning not to...
We've had a very quiet dog in here, yes. You hear our door. How would you not... Like, you'd know if we had a dog. So, if we're ready, I'm happy to say that you can give us a call at U.S. phone number 802-321-HACK. That is 802-321-4225.
And as soon as Gila said five, that is when the phone line got activated. So now it'll start working. If you tried calling it before then... You would have gotten the mysterious message that Gila was alluding to, which I have no recollection of.
But if you want to hear it, you can also call the phone line while we have a caller.
If that's your idea of a good time.
I'm not saying it is, but...
The phone is ringing, we're about to pick it up. Did we pick it up, Kyle? No, it's still ringing. So, okay, now the phone has been picked up, and I'm going to say Kyle, the phone is still ringing. Does your button not work? Let me know when it's picked up, when it's actually picked up. Okay, it's actually picked up. All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. Clever. Very clever. Let's try it again. 802-321-4225. Here's how it works. You stay on the phone line, and you talk, and we hear you, and we talk back and forth. It's called a phone call.
A phone call. Also, if you're really feeling sporting, we have a toll-free line, but I don't remember that number right now. Also, if you want to talk to someone who's not us, scroll back up for a sec, please. If you want to talk to someone who's not us, you're always free to call. Phone number 833-922-4692 and make a pledge to WBAI. Also, always available to take you there.
We should have given that number out when we were on the radio station.
We probably should have, wow. But it's a pinned post on the Off the Hook Mastodon account. So you can call us at 802-321-4225 or 833-755-2600.
That's it.
I can't believe I still remembered most of that.
That was nicely done.
Thank you.
The 2600 isn't that hard, and you know it's an 8-something. All right. We have a phone call, Kyle? All right.
You do.
And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Yes, Emmanuel.
Rebel, you did it again. You're only, I think, five short of the record of being the first caller in American radio history. I looked it up.
Okay, before I get into what I wanted to ask and mention... I'd like to mention... I'd like to say that I'd like to help volunteer...
This is the pre-rebel call here. Okay, go ahead.
I'd like to say that I'd like to help with the volunteering and help with the nonprofit and all that. Maybe sell for the... I mean, you know how some nonprofits have, like, people that... It's not a salesperson, but it's like people to get the people to donate, like get some, like maybe, I don't know if you want corporate donors, like like AT&T or, you know, all these companies that we always mention?
Okay, so what you're saying is, with your skill of harassing operators over the decades, you think you can get AT&T to donate, give it a shot. I mean, I'd like to see what happens.
No, I'm saying,
they may pay all kinds of money to get you off the phone.
No, I'm saying corporate donors, like, would you want Google to donate to Hope or Yahoo or, you know, or...
That bridge is not anywhere near us right now. As it gets closer, we can have that conversation and talk about the pros and cons. But right now, I just think it would be a waste of oxygen to even discuss it, because I don't see that happening. I mean, maybe that's something that we want to consider, but it's going to be up to the people that are part of Hope.
Okay, well, yeah, I'd like to...
I'm not going to decree it here or anything.
I don't know. I'd like to, of course, be a part of Hope because, you know, I've gone to a lot of Hope conferences, and I've learned a lot from the Hope conferences.
Which Hopes have you not been to?
I think I've been to a couple in, like, maybe... I don't know, maybe it wasn't the one in 2006 or...
Hope number six? Was that Hope number six? No, that was...
I don't know, but... I wasn't at every single one of them. I mean, there was some of that I missed. Actually, you know what?
No, wait, that was the fifth Hope. Time, fifth Hope was something.
The first one time you were at St. John's?
The first time we were at St. John's. In 2002.
Yeah.
2022.
22, or whatever it was. But 24, that's when I didn't go because I, you know, the talks weren't, I wasn't interested in what...
Wow.
What's going on?
And it was in your own borough, too.
Right. Well, I went to the last one, of course.
Yes, we remember.
Yeah, okay, let's see. I'd like to know, remember Frame Relay? What is Frame Relay?
Is this the call? Has the call started now? This is the actual Rebel call? I just want to be able to know.
Yes, this is the actual call with questions.
Okay, all right.
How does Frame Relay work? Is that like when a company like leases a line for data?
You know, I remember Frame Relay being discussed in like every article in some of those technical magazines. It was some kind of network technology. I mean, I never really got into it. Anybody out there?
I think it's
Kyle.
Alex is raising his hand. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, it's a packet switching system usually that would connect two different LANs together or multiple LANs, so multiple local area networks connected through a packet switching network that makes it, I guess, technically a wide area network. But that's the gist of it, if I recall correctly. It's been a while since I thought about Frame Relay.
Yeah, me too. I didn't think about it much then either.
Is that like for example, I'm just wanting to know how computer networks of terminals in mid 90s worked. Is it like let's say Blockbuster Video? They had these DEC VT320 terminals. And their main office is in like I don't know Texas or something like that. I don't know where it exactly was, but did each store go through a frame relay system to get the data from the mainframe? Is that the way it worked?
I don't think any of us know. Do you know about this, Alex?
No, I have no idea how Blockbuster, you know, set up their systems and things there. But, you know, there wouldn't be a dedicated physical circuit between these two sites. They'd probably use some kind of virtual circuit inside of a provider's network, and then that would allow the data to circulate.
Hang on, Kyle, you've got an answer.
I cheated a little bit, but it's a protocol that was used over traditional telephone lines based on X25 that allowed them to use lines that were subject to a lot of noise, but it was originally developed for ISDN. So a lot of the companies, like Blockbuster or whomever, they'd have a telephone line, they'd have boxes on either end, and they'd use this protocol to send data over those. Or, in some cases, a business might hire or connect or pair bond several lines to create an ISDN line and run the same protocol. albeit with less interference from noise because of the structure of ISDN being distinct from voice telephone lines. So that's my quick glance at it.
Yeah, but is it like a T1 line, like a leaf line? Is T1?
Well, it could be whatever. That's kind of it. Yeah, maybe they get a private line for sort of like uptime or just to like guarantee a connection, depending on how critical the service was for their business. But yeah, theoretically, they could hire or connect whatever type of line was available for business customers in that market. Does that sound right? I don't know. I'm just saying from my hypothesis. It could be another way or multitudes of ways.
What about the packet switch network, like Telenet and Pinenet, and there was like these companies that provided packet data networks? They were...
That stuff predates stuff that I ever got to really mess with, but I think you might also be talking about Telnet.
No, he's talking about Telnet.
Telnet.
Telenet and TimeNet. What was the one in Canada, DataPack? Was that what it was? Yeah. It
you all know these things a little bit better than I do. Like, I didn't mess with any of that stuff. I was too young.
There's a way you could connect to remote computers locally, and I got in a lot of trouble doing that. But, hey, Rebel, we're gonna move on because there are other calls and we're running out of time. We don't want to dominate.
Is that the WBAI connected to that transmitter back in the 80s and 90s?
What about connected to the transmitter? What now?
Like when WBAI, went on 505 8th Avenue, how did they connect 505 8th Avenue to the Empire State Building? Did they use, phone lines?
I would imagine they probably used a T1 because it would be kind of silly to have a microwave relay so close. And I think it might be kind of difficult, too, with all the buildings. I think they broadcast off the Empire State Building and probably used a T1 to get there.
And same thing with down in Wall Street. They used a phone line, like a T1.
Sure, why not?
Line.
Yeah, why not? And I don't know what they're using now. I don't think it's a T1. I think it's something else.
Well, the thing with the stations is they use multitudes now. So they're able, I think, just generally speaking, to use commodity broadband, but also use what telephone lines are available. But you got to understand, the same things are happening. Like copper lines are disappearing. So a lot of if you get or have one of those, even in the city, keeping it is sometimes in flux. So that changes. That's something that the management and operations at the radio stations have to deal with all the time. But yeah, so they get just as much guff from Verizon saying, hey, you gotta be Fios now and stuff like that. But typically something that's broadcasting that needs something that's reliable, since the class of service for business leased or other types of lines can sometimes be really extraordinary, and it might be outside the budget of community radio. There are ways of using other connections, but having backups so that if something happens, you can still get to the tower. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, when was T1 invented? In the 80s?
You can look all this stuff up because we're not Wikipedia here. We do know other people want to get through, but Rebel, thanks. We'll talk to you in future weeks. Want to open up the phone lines for more people because we're at 52 minutes past the hour. I know we spent a lot of time talking ourselves, but we had important things to say. 802-321-4225. Let's take one or two more phone calls before we have to run, because we do have other things to do. We're in all kinds of modes here, and we have all kinds of projects. And yeah, Skila, go ahead.
So a couple people chimed in. University of Washington Library still has a bunch of X25 books. Needless to say, they have a lot of dust built up on them. And Tim in Connecticut says frame relay is a standardized wide area network technology that specifies the physical and data link layers of digital telecommunications channels using a packet switching methodology, originally developed as a simplified version of the X25 system designed to be carried over the emerging integrated services digital networks.
Cool. Well, that pretty much explains it. And Rebel, you can look that stuff up. It's not hard to do a little bit of research. But thanks for sharing and getting people thinking about it. That's important, too. 802-321-4225. We're going to wait a couple minutes to get a phone call.
I love the discussion of all this stuff because what people have got to realize is it still works.
Yeah.
You talk about it a lot. We've talked about it over the years a lot. Our listeners will know this. But they retire it because the business model doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But the technology, the protocols, they all still work.
It's like payphones. Payphones still work if you don't let them fall apart.
Sure, sure. That sometimes these technologies are superseded for reasons of power and capabilities. But in many cases, or they're supplanted for newer, different protocols and technologies and to accommodate more heavier traffic and stuff like that. But people can still play around with the protocols, simulate things, test things. If you have a lab or a workbench and you want to try stuff out. In fact, there's ways of emulating and doing this stuff with modern microprocessing, and it's all so much more capable. So it's really your creativity is the limit. So by all means, get interested, mm-hmm. play around with it, implement it for something silly or fun, or I guess preferably in these times, something that helps, something that matters, something that affects something, that or that points something out, that makes a statement of some kind, or is useful in a novel way.
This is the kind of thing that happens at Hope.
We have no call.
Times 100, times 200, times 1,000. 802-321-4225. We'll give it one more minute. And Rob, did you have something? Go ahead.
Yeah, while we're waiting for a call, I just want to say I do love looking into older technologies, because if you're someone who's mainly familiar with how things work now, it can be amazing to learn your roots and go back and learn how these things came about, what came before, and realize that, oh, my God, they're basically a step away from banging rocks together, and how did we ever get this work? It is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the sort of thing that can happen when, you know, smart people get together and decide that they're going to make something happen and do it.
Yeah, definitely. And, it's just taking something apart, putting it back together, that is the key in learning how technology works. And I just fear today, with everything just, pre-assembled and tiny, it's impossible to do that. Yeah, you can take it apart. You can do that, but you'll never get it back together again because humans can't do that. And I just feel sorry for kids that won't experience that. But, the old technology, as Kyle said, still works. It's still there. So let's preserve that and use it as learning tools, because that's, that's really, really fascinating. Yeah.
A comment from Tim in Connecticut, who says, most all the stuff works, but things are slow these days. Last Christmas, my nephews wouldn't have a LAN party on the 10G hub I donated, as it was too slow.
Wow. Those sound like fun kids.
We were talking about connectivity at Hope, and I remember when connectivity came to Hope, and it was one room full of dumb terminals, just in text mode, that, was something new. It was a connection to the Internet, and there were people who spent the whole conference in that room just banging away on a VT100 or whatever they were, because that was amazing for the time, and it was something that not everyone got to do.
Wow. Well, if and when we do have Hope, I shouldn't say if and, I should say when we have Hope, we will have vintage technology of one sort or another, computers, phones, where people can play with them and learn about them and be inspired by them. That's what it's all about. Is that a plane passing over someone's house?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, that's our
plane. No. Hold on a second. Because when Rebel was on the phone, I heard what sounded like a plane over his phone call. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking the two of you are hearing the same planes, because he's in Queens, you're in Queens. How about that?
It's possible. We've got a couple of big airports in
the
range.
The whole borough of Queens hears the same plane.
We're all under the same big sky.
What a tiny community we all are in the end.
It's so true.
All right, we are going to close it up for tonight. Final words?
Yes. Sort of to envelope what we were talking about with mm-hmm. celebrity news earlier today.
Did they find her? Did they find her?
If they found her, I'm not aware of it. But
okay.
In other celebrity news, please make sure you're getting your necessary health screenings. James Van Der Beek was 48 years old.
Okay, who's that? That's
he was an actor. He played Dawson on Dawson's Creek. Among
Dawson died.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Wow. I remember Dawson's Creek. They had a Free Kevin sticker in one of their episodes.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal. But Dawson, he was a heartthrob.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't know about this. I got a message that Harold died. Harold and Maude.
Yeah, and we were having a discussion in our house about who the Farrah Fawcett of today is going to be. my theory is that it's going to be Bud Cort, unfortunately, but he was also 30 years older than James Vanderbeek.
I don't understand what you just said. I know Farrah Fawcett died years ago.
Farrah Fawcett died on the same day as Michael Jackson, and Farrah Fawcett's death was in the news for about an hour before Michael Jackson. They're like, Michael Jackson was found unconscious at the Neverland Ranch, and he's good. And then he died. So, like, Farrah Fawcett died, and no one talked about it.
Wow.
I remember
that. I know.
Yeah. Bud Cort was Harold. He was also, for the computer nerds out there, he was Edgar, the computer in Electric Dreams, which I liked a lot.
That I didn't know.
Yes.
He was also the corporeal form of God in Dogma.
You know, for those who don't know Harold and Maude, it was a weird film from, I think, the 70s about this kid. It was like, you know, a teenager, you know, not mm-hmm. not a very old teenager either, who hooked up with this lady in her 80s, I think. What mm-hmm. was the actress's name?
Ruth Gordon.
I don't know if she's still around.
No, she died shortly after Harold and Maude, I think.
Did she? Okay, because, yeah, she'd only be about 130 by now. But yeah, okay, that makes sense. Wow, okay, tough day, boy.
It's a tough day, but ultimately, remember that you as an individual have a lot to contribute to the world, and you can't do that if you're dead, so please stay on top of your preventive screenings and preventive care and stay with us.
Yep.
Also, I misspoke. Ruth Gordon passed in 85.
85. Okay, I missed
1985.
That. I'm sorry to hear that.
But, wow.
She was 88 when she passed away, though.
That's too young. I mean mm-hmm. it. That's too young. It really is.
Yeah.
Okay, so ending on a somber note, keep hope alive. Hope.net will hopefully get in touch with many more people and have more to report in the weeks ahead. Good seeing you all, as always. Alex, Gila, Rob, Kyle, good night all.
Bye.
Good night.